Welcome to AM Best Audio.
So thanks for joining us, Peter. What I'd like to kick off with is it a good time to be an actuary and why?
Yes, Bill, I would say it is a good time to be an actuary. I think, you know, not to overstep here, but I think it's always a good time to be an actuary. I think the need for data analytics and trying to understand trends and react to them and offer business solutions is a skill that, you know, is always in demand. And I think the Actuarial Society does a very good job at making their exam program reflect these demands that are needed in the industry. So yes, I think it's a good time.
And I guess there's even demand for actuarial skills outside the insurance world too.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the the challenges that companies have, and that I think actuaries need to make sure to continue to focus on are, you know, like I said, data analytics skills, being able to organize and manipulate data. They need to stay in touch with current technologies, make sure that they're abreast on those. I think there's a lot of business skill demands on actuaries as well, because they need to analyze complicated things, I think, that are getting more and more complicated every day, to be able to dissect all the volume of data that's at our disposal, and then translate that, like I say, into practical business solutions that companies can use to accomplish their goals. So I think there'll always be a demand for actuaries, but I think actuaries will always be challenged by changes in these environments too.
So in terms of the technology that's being deployed, can you talk a little bit about how artificial intelligence is factoring into the world of being an actuary?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think it's manifesting itself, at least right now, in a couple of different ways. There's a lot of processes that are maybe traditional actuarial processes, and I'm on the PNC side, so that are now being automated. That's not necessarily through AI, but they're just being automated. They're being made more efficient. You can get through the traditional processes a lot faster, which allows more of this data analytics. A lot of the tools that are out there to measure risk now that are being put into the marketplace contain a lot of artificial intelligence. So I think actuaries are connected to that through those means there. But there's also a lot of machine learning and artificial intelligence that's going into building various risk models, whether they be used for pricing or other risk analysis. So using this high-level technology to help build the most accurate models, you can build the models faster, you can kind of assess their accuracy a lot faster. You can adapt those models a lot faster through these, you know, through AI, through machine learning. And I frankly, I'm not a data scientist, and I don't claim to be, but I think we're just scratching the surface on this stuff. I think there's a lot ahead. Even making it simpler to analyze rate filings, for instance, you know, looking at competitor strategies and filings that they make with state insurance departments, you can use AI to help you augment those filings, which are thousands of pages long it does simplify things greatly.
And I guess it's one of those questions of where you have this ability to take all sorts of third-party data, throw it into, I guess, this digital centrifuge to see what comes of it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't think that, you know, AI is going to replace data scientists. I don't think that AI is going to replace actuaries by any means. But it does allow exactly what you said to happen a lot faster, and then get the analysts to kind of dig into what the results are, and, you know, a lot of meaningful time on the output, so to speak.
And I guess to some degree, it's one of those things where you could use that AI to battle test your models that you're developing to run simulations.
Absolutely. Yes. And that'll be a whole new lens of you know, trying to, like I say, validate what the model output is. So, like I say, I don't claim to be an expert on the data science end of it, but I think the potential here is just incredible.
So, as far as AI essentially being a tool for you to do your job more effectively, how do you see this helping to evolve the field of being an actuary in the next 5 years, let's say?
Well, I think it's going to I think it's going to change the jobs of actuaries to some degree. I think they're still going to have those core skills involved, you know, with analytics and converting their analysis into business decisions. So they'll have to have those core skills that will remain. I think what AI is going to do is speed up the process and take something that's getting a little more complicated to do and help synthesize it to get down to that analytics and marrying it to business decisions. So,
and as an actuary at a mutual insurer versus a stock-based insurer, how does that influence some of your decisions when you're trying to measure risk and having to appeal to policyholders rather than investors that are looking for, let's say, a 20% return on equity for the quarter, and it's a
right.
quarter, and at a stock company, it's very much a quarter-to-quarter kind of thing.
Yes. Being with a mutual, we do have a little bit more of the luxury to look at the long term. And that's not to say that we can sit around, because I think if you sit around too long, you get left behind, and that's another bigger problem. But it does allow you to not be focused on quarterly earnings so much and look at things from a longer perspective. Case in point is we have been spending a lot of time over the last year updating lifetime value modeling and, in fact, using multiple machine learning developed models by one of our data scientists to get, a more insight into lifetime value, a more accurate view of what lifetime value is. And certainly we look at the long term anyway as a mutual, but having this lens of lifetime value to help us make better decisions and being able to build the models, do it right, implement their findings in the right way, I think it's been good to have a little bit of luxury of time.
Customize your data experience. BestLink now offers an interactive company dashboard that provides company-level intelligence in a fast, user-friendly interface featuring interactive tables, charts, and Sparkline performance histories. Customize the dashboard tiles to prioritize the insurer ratings, data, and analytics that best support your workflow. AM Best. Our insight, your advantage.
When it comes to some of the bigger issues that are going on with underwriting and risk management. How do you see modeling for catastrophes and climate change, you know, affecting how you do your job?
Yeah, that's very interesting, and it's changing rapidly. And even the events of the past couple of weeks, frankly, I think highlight it. But from a risk management perspective, we're doing a lot more scenario testing than we've done in the past. And we are looking at probable maximum loss outputs that are much longer tail than the traditional 1-in-100-year event, let's say. You know, what does the 1-in-100-year hurricane look like, and what kind of damage does it cause? And analyzing that just isn't sufficient anymore. We're looking at 1-in-250 events. We're looking at 1-in-500 events. And even in rare cases, we're looking at 1-in-1,000-year events. And those things are obviously extremely rare. But I think in order to get the whole view of your risk, you have to expand into these other areas. So we're using state-of-the-art models from various vendors in the industry to assess risk on an aggregate level and on an individual risk level as well. It helps us measure certainly what rates to charge, what underwriting decisions to make, helps us measure concentration risk in a new way. So I think that is an area that is constantly changing. And even Hurricane Helene here and the events associated with that is a perfect example for this conversation. When that thing was heading towards the Gulf and making its way into the Gulf, it was, you know, and I don't mean to belittle it or anything, but it was a hurricane. It was Cat 3, Cat 4 coming in, and the Florida people are tough, and they were ready and prepared for it and all that. But what happened further inland, and those residents of North Carolina and the resulting rainfall and flooding and storm surge, I think it highlights the discussion that we're having right now that, you know, sometimes it can look like a duck, but you know what? It's not a duck in the end.
No, no. And I think, you know, to raise, kind of accentuate a point that you made, I think people are very good at modeling what happens with a Category 3 or Category 4 hurricane hitting the Florida coast. But when it's still Category 2, 300 miles inland.
Right.
I don't think people are accustomed to the tragic results that you get with that.
Well, and even case in point, I you know, was obviously paying attention to the event, and then was actually traveling that week, and was traveling and didn't pay attention to the news for a few hours, and then wound up catching a newscast later in the evening, and it was reported that they, you know, there were over 50 fatalities at the time, and I know now it's much more than that. I'm like, wait a minute, 50 fatalities? What happened? It's a real tragedy, and you know, I think it's making people think of storms differently. You know, the next storm that comes through, you know, there's going to be a lot of people modeling out, well, wait a second now. I'm not going to go look at the cone of impact here and look at the first few counties or even a couple of states. I got to track this storm well inland, and what if it does this, and what if it has these attributes? And, you know, that's going to translate into, obviously, better measures of risk over time. And hopefully ways to mitigate losses too. I don't want to lose sight of that, Bill, in this whole thing too. You know, I think it's going to shed a lot of light on how can we mitigate these losses. I don't know if we're ever going to be able to prevent them, but you know, at least somehow be able to control the damage and get people to safety and faster and all of these things. So, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with IBHS, and they're working very hard on stuff like this. And I think their efforts will be well rewarded.
Yeah, I think it might take like public infrastructure investment as well. You know, it might be matters of just improving how storms, you know, storm drainage, or, you know, it's where they can handle that 250-year storm that, you know, seems to be happening much more frequently.
Right. Yep.
So, in the field of I'm jumping topics here.
Sure.
So with social inflation, what you're seeing is some of these exorbitant judgments that are being settled. I mean, dealing with personal lines, it's probably not as much of an issue as for a commercial insurer, but I think you're still seeing some of these shock judgments affecting personal lines, though, you know, not in a way that they used to be. How are you modeling some of these court cases and legal issues that are arising where people are being sued for significant amounts of money?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. The social inflation obviously is hitting us. There's no doubt about it. I think attorney involvement in cases continues to climb at a very steady pace, and the costs are influencing the system. Here at Amica, we don't have a real formal, mega case modeling task that we do to try to incorporate this risk in. From a process standpoint, we really just kind of let the data do the talking and you know, the trends that we're experiencing and our losses get incorporated into what our projections are going to be and ultimately what the future rates are too. But it's not a big formal process, but it is something that, you know, it's certainly a risk that we have to face and try to understand. Talk with our claims folks about things that they're seeing all the time, and they categorized it kind of interestingly. They said, you know, a few years ago, the values of these cases used to be much more predictable. Mm. And you know, you'd get the facts of the case and they were able to kind of zero in on what the value is in a pretty accurate fashion. And they said that it doesn't seem to be as predictable nowadays as it was years ago. And, you know, in terms of you brought up kind of, you know, these big mega cases here, and they're attributing it to people's becoming desensitized to what the value of a verdict is worth, almost, you know, that, okay, you know, someone spits out $3 million because of a certain injury or something like that. And it's like they felt like years ago there would have been a little bit of a shock factor associated with that, and they feel that that shock factor is kind of dissipating a little bit. And that's weighing into jury and, you know, the juries and the deliberations that they have and the cases that are being made, you know, by the various attorneys and things like that. So,
and I guess that even plays into incentives to settle and it sometimes sure. settling what could yeah. be a winnable case.
Yep, it could be. I mean, I know our gang kind of takes them all on a case by case basis, but, I think it would. And litigation funding too. It's very intriguing what that is all about. But unfortunately, the result of some of this stuff, and I'm sure there's people that are hurt, and they are getting they're getting fair settlements, and that's great. I think that that's an important part of the process. But a byproduct of it all, too, is costs of insurance are going up because of it, and we're all paying more as a result.
And I guess with some of these cases, how do you effectively model against it, or is it almost as much of a lottery case where you're yeah. wrangling with what's going on in the court, and you know they might be thinking of it as a jackpot on one hand, but you're also thinking of it as a potentially large loss on the other.
Sure. Yeah, and I think it's an area of great uncertainty. But, and I don't mean to kind of oversimplify it a little.
No.
You know, it's just there's so much variability there that it's like hard to build a structure around it on how to handle it almost. And that's been a challenge, and certainly on the actuarial end of trying to dissect through all that stuff. But and that's why we've kind of just said, you know what, our best plan of attack right now is we got to just let the data come in and use it as it enters the system.
Is there like a certain amount of guidance that Amica is providing its agents as far as making sure that your policyholders are not left exposed, let's say? I mean, I'll use the case for my auto insurance policies in New Jersey. It's typically $100,000 per person, $300,000 per accident, and it really hasn't changed that much in terms of property coverage. You know, I mean, some people might raise it up to $100,000 for property damage because some people drive expensive cars, but...
Right.
Right. Is there anything that Amica is doing when it comes to advising agents and their insureds?
Yeah, well, Bill, absolutely. We've had a tradition, I think, as long as we've been in an existence of making sure that we provide this advice to our policyholders. And we're a direct company, so we interact with them individually and one-on-one. And that is an area that our customer service teams stress with our policyholders every day, is things cost more than you think. And, you know, make sure that you have enough protection for yourself. And they do a terrific job at I think, weighing the pluses and minuses of additional cost with being able to sleep better at night. And so we have a huge proportion of our book that purchases umbrella coverage on top of their auto and on top of their home as well. So and I attribute that to, again, to our representatives that I think do a very good job of explaining the value of having an Amica policy and what we're gonna do for you in the unfortunate event that you have a loss. So.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.